Hello and welcome to another episode of Afrolog. We are currently at episode 10, and if you listened to our last episode, thank you for doing so. If you haven't, you need to go back and do so. I need to mention also that we are now available on all streaming platforms, so Spotify.
All of them?
All of them. So you have no excuse not to listen to us now. And please do make sure that you are sharing. As always, Afrolog is a platform for informed debate and conversation on African issues. And today we have the same guests as the last time because they're so great. And we'll just have them introduce themselves once again, guys. So,
hi, I'm Dami. I wanted to list all the platforms we're on now.
Okay.
Right, let's go. Can we have a cheer after each one, please?
Okay. All right.
Apple Podcasts.
Whee!
Spotify.
Woo!
Stitcher.
Woo!
Google Podcasts.
Woo!
Anchor.
Woo!
Pocket Podcasts.
Woo! Woo!
Radio Public.
Woo!
SoundCloud.
Woo!
Tune In. Breaker.
Woo!
And Damn, you're allowed to use personal podcasting, platform. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, cool.
You lost us.
All right, well, that went.
But yeah.
All right, cool. Let's edit that out.
No.
That's a joke. Yeah. It was a joke.
We get it. We know.
Okay. Cool. You said no. I'm upset now.
We get it. It was just unexpected.
What was unexpected?
Damian Lati's personal podcast.
No, podcasting platform.
Can we move on?
Sorry.
Please.
Hi, guys. My name is Bukola. Yeah.
Okay.
No, come on.
Well,
come on.
Tell us a bit more about you.
Wagwan.
Okay. So I am a
lawyer.
I'm a lawyer.
Oh, wow. Goodness me.
And yeah. I'm not practicing, so I feel like I'm deceiving people when I tell them I'm a lawyer.
You are called to do bar.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm a barrister, but I'm moving into like a different sector now. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting.
Exciting.
Hello, dear followers. It's Ade again, aka I Love Loafers, aka if you think about male fragrance, please think about me.
Hey. Whoa, okay.
It's important for a man to smell scintillating.
I agree.
King there's energy. Some, King there's energy.
Some smell that some guys wear that just destabilizes your thinking. Like, genuinely. Like, I'm just going to say it. If you smell good, holla. Anyway.
But yeah, for all of those who are listening, look, whether you're at work, you're on your way to work, in the gym, or about to go to bed, please make sure you listen to Afrolog.
Yeah. And do
day.
Share.
Yes.
And share with your people. We've got this is our 10th episode, so there's enough to binge on. Okay. Awesome. So today, do we have any little entertainment stuff that we want to discuss?
Yeah, I can't get over Jussie, man. Jussie.
I swear we discussed Jussie last episode. We're not doing this.
Jussie.
We're not doing this again.
Jussie.
No, we're done with Jussie.
If I say Jussie anytime throughout this episode, you know why. It's because the scale of what he's done, man.
Oh. That's ridiculous.
I think for me, on the more serious note, and I'm sure people would agree, is that finally R. Kelly has now been charged.
Yes.
Take him out.
Yes.
And he will finally face...
And he's so broke, he can't pay jail. Hallelujah. Yeah.
So I think for everyone who's followed the historical cloud that has followed him throughout his career, whether that being his illegal marriage with Aaliyah, may her soul rest in peace,
amen,
to the court case,
amen,
was acquitted for. I think this is finally time for the victims now to experience justice of their own.
Definitely.
And for the once well-known talented artist on face value to now face justice and ultimately to get help for his general problem. Yes.
Yeah, they said someone said R. Kelly and Jussie are in the same jail. The prison choir is about to get turned up.
We do know that R. Kelly swings both ways. So...
No, I didn't mean like, I'm talking about the prison choir.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right.
The prison choir will now be turned up, you know. But, but both of them got bail, I think, or whatever it is.
Oh,
let's just move on still.
That's mad. Yeah, oh, my gosh. Okay. Right. So today, we've got quite a few topics to cover, and we hope you are, engaged and do share with us your thoughts as well on social media. First of all, I would just like to give a shout out you know, like a big, big shout out. And when I say, I know everyone's going to like have something to say because of my allegiance to a certain president of a certain African country.
Hashtag.
If you've listened to Afrola,
she
listens, so she knows, right? If you listen to Afrolog podcast enough, you know where my allegiance lie. Okay, all right. Anywho, I'm not ashamed. Rwanda has just launched Africa's first smartphone manufacturing hub. Africa's first smartphone manufacturing hub. And one of the investors is actually Rwandan, but I think he's of South Asian heritage. Yeah. Yeah. I remember looking at his face and I'm like, yeah, it doesn't look like an African. But like, anyway, let's not get into that. But he's Rwandan. Which is great to see Africans investing in Africa. And it's absolutely fantastic. I don't know why Dami's shaking his head today, guys. He's shaking his head.
I agree. It's good to see Africans investing in Africa.
Yeah, it's great to see Africans investing in Africa. And it's great to see that he has a lot of government support as well as international support. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see this really take off. For the life of me, I'm so sorry. I can't remember the name. Oh, I can't remember the name of the phone.
Can I just interrupt the Paul Kagame podcast just to bring something in? While you think of the name, right? I also have another tidbit to bring up, right? This is unrelated. Peckham. I don't live in Peckham. I was in Peckham recently, yeah? And there's lots of hair shops and food shops. And I was like, all right, cool. Let me find a black-owned hair shop. I was like, cool, let me find a black-owned one. So I went into a couple of them. You know, I see non-black people in there. I'm like, cool, you know, that's fantastic. But I'd rather find... This is Peckham, yeah? Peckham, mm-hmm. Right. So I'm like, let's find a black-owned one. You know, let's try and support a little bit. So long story short, my afternoon in Peckham, I couldn't find a single, not one, black-owned hair shop. I asked around. In Peckham. I asked people on the street. People said, I don't... And I just thought that's very, very strange.
Wait, were you at Peckham Rye? Like after
I was
you
in
get
Peckham
the...
Rye.
That's not possible. All those aunties that used to come out to you and tell you, sister, do you want to do your hair?
I think what Dami is basically saying, yes, the freelance hairdressers are there. But in terms of...
Black-owned.
In terms of
the store,
cosmetic shops, I think that's what he basically has.
Right. They're not... in terms of cosmetic
shops, I'm not talking about people who sell Remy from AliExpress. I'm talking about someone who's owned a shop.
Yeah, but that's not a new phenomenon. A lot of black hair beauty supply stores are owned by South Asians.
Yeah, but that was my issue. I was surprised.
There are a few black owned beauty supply stores. Unfortunately, I don't know their names. I don't know about in Peckham, but in London, there are a few.
I hope so.
I think to avoid us digressing too much, ultimately, what you should judge businesses on.
No, sorry.
Bear with me for a second. I haven't landed first. apologies. Judge an entrepreneur by the value that they provided rather than the background that they are.
Amen.
Simply increasing the amount of the quota of the amount of BME entrepreneurs, but they don't add value is irrelevant and it's redundant. If people from a BME background want to then start this, is where do you see a gap in the market that is currently not being offered? It's left to the individual to then assume that post. So if there's no black cosmetic shops in Peckham, I've lived in Peckham for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So for me, if people want to do it, go ahead. Break the status quo. But if people are not doing it, the Asian man that owns the hair cosmetic shop should not feel guilty for it.
No.
They're simply not competition.
No, but that's the thing. I'm not speaking to Asian people right now. I'm speaking to other Africans and Caribbean people. I was surprised. Like, not one. Like, I'm still surprised.
You know, I can understand that.
I don't get it.
And there's that age-old...
I don't get it. The customers are all Africans and Caribbeans. Yeah.
There's that age-old... I don't know how to phrase it, but like... Within, for example, the black community, money leaves. Like, it doesn't stay within the black community. Whereas within other, for example, like the Jewish community, the South Asian community, the Indian community, like, they keep the economy within their community. I guess that's what you're alluding to. And I can see why you're alluding to that. But I guess it's up to us to take on that responsibility to say, okay, do I want to be an entrepreneur in the things that cater to my needs and cater to our own sort of consumption?
Can I? I just feel like in that situation, sometimes we also have things that we're also dealing with. So it's not about the money not staying. The secondary aspects, things like customer service, do we know how to run a business?
100.
Do we know how to put a business and sustain it?
100%.
That's something that a lot of Black people, unfortunately, still don't struggle
with. But we do know how to run.
But I'm sorry, I've gone to Black-owned businesses. Number one, the first issue in our community, whether you're African or whether you're Caribbean, is do we support each other enough? For example, the answer is no. So therefore, the lamentations that there isn't is redundant because those who then see it will not support it and say, well, when are they going to go bust? I've gone to African-owned brands or Caribbean-owned brands and I've been absolutely appalled. Not all of them, but there are some which their customer service
absolutely abysmal. I don't accept these arguments.
Okay, guys.
I don't accept these arguments. Do you know why? Yeah, because I go to lots of places with bad customer service.
But we don't highlight that. Oh, it's a white company and they have black customer service, a bad customer service. But when a black company owned company somehow has something wrong with it, we have to highlight the fact that they are black.
Like,
and that's
let's tell the truth. We do this thing about Jamaican ladies and Caribbean shops. The last time I was treated rudely by a Jamaican lady was a long time ago in one of the takeaway shops. It was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. It's not that bad anymore, right? We kind of make these jokes about it, don't we? Mm-hmm. So I just want to say, let's get out there. Let's, one, support people, mm-hmm. right? And I think our support shouldn't be dependent on
race.
On how good the quality is, right? Because if you say that you're a singer now, mm-hmm. I'm going to buy your song, even though I don't think you're Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Because, do you know what I mean? I have to support you regardless.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely flawed. No, I'm going to support you because of the quality that you bring.
No. Can we just bring this back? Can we just bring this back? And actually, this relates a lot to the Marathon, that's what it's called, that Rwanda is going to be developing.
Marathon.
It's going to be called the Marathon.
I want to get one.
Okay. So, you want to get one. It's not even been made yet. You don't know how good the quality
is,
whatever.
I'll support. Like, right. Okay. I'll buy a phone.
It would be interesting to see the support that this phone is going to get when it actually does come out. I think their market strategy is to, first of all, penetrate the African market before being sold abroad. But they definitely do intend to be international. Intercontinental. They do not want to be just an African based phone. I do have to highlight though that while Marathon is going to be the first manufactured smartphone on the continent, Lagos State in Nigeria also has the first assembly point for mobile phones in Africa. The only difference between both is the fact that the Marathon, the intention is that they manufacture the parts and everything within Africa, whereas in Lagos, it's been the parts are being imported from China. And funny enough, the owners of the assembly point in Lagos State, they're not Nigerians. They are, I think they may be Middle Eastern or North Africans, but that's fine. Not that there's particularly any problem with that. It's just as a note.
It is when you don't have it for yourself. But let's not get into that.
My thing is this. If people want to provide a service, the first thing I look at is, I don't look at where you're coming from. I'm looking at the value add that you're adding to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, I watched a video from Simon Sinek. A lot of it is, it's basically the golden circle. And when he talked about how businesses go about and sell themselves, is a lot of people focus on the why. So ultimately, why are you doing this? I'm not looking at your color, but I'm looking at why are you doing it? What is the value add? What is the mission statement? Mm-hmm. What are you trying to solve? I think we should avoid the fact of simply supporting someone because they come from a background such as ours. But I will support you objectively based on the value that you're going to add and make sure that I'm not biased simply because you're black and you're African. Sorry. I think
I agree with you.
We don't have time to be that.
We need to avoid this tick box exercise. Not simply because, okay, let me say, for example, some people that I support objectively, not because of their color. The founder of Black Young Professionals, I support her simply because I support Kike for the
Let's get her on next time.
I support Kike for the very fact that in, for example, technology, there are not enough females, females generally, within the tech scene.
But you're now looking at her background.
Within the tech scene.
That's her background.
No, I'm looking at her at simply at the fact that she saw that there's a community of people that need to be brought together and she's basically doing it.
You're looking at her background.
No, I'm just...
If it's because of females in the technology industry.
But all I'm saying to you, all I'm saying to you is she's seen a problem, she's adding value, and yes, she's black, and that's very, very good to see, but I will support you independent of whether you're black, blue, or green. It's simply you see that you see that there's a value add, and we need to avoid of simply saying, because you're black, we need to support you. No, because you're black and you're doing something that is meaningful, I will support you.
No. This is the thing. We don't have the opportunity to be that idealistic.
Exactly.
We need to support each other regardless.
We need to be in our own corner.
Exactly.
As much as I agree with
you, I'm going
to
buy the marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was in Africa right now, I'd be at the front of the queue to buy one of the phones.
But
because we have to support.
What if it's like, I don't know, not saying anything bad about it before it's come out, but what if it's like, I don't know, burning, or it's the quality is not something that you expected, or is not something that you're used to.
It's worth it to encourage them.
What is worth it to encourage them? Apologies for cutting you off. For example, if someone's using it, it's all about, we mentioned in the previous episode, the word accountability. Hey, we've got a new product. This is what we want to do. We want an African-made phone within the continent. If you are a user of this phone, we would like your feedback, good or bad. If they truly want to achieve innovation, they should be willing to take the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
More of the bad than the good, because we can always be complacent on the good. But as you said, if there's a problem with the phone and it burns and I have to buy a new phone, I'm not going to say simply because I'm African, I want to support you, but the phone is not great, if it was that the case, but I want to then incur another cost. No, I am a user. I want it to achieve what I want to use it for.
All I'm saying is we have to make a conscientious effort support people from our communities.
My issue is if for some reason that phone does end up being a problem, and
it's not going to be.
I'm just saying.
Obviously, it was done in your country for your guy, innit?
Relax. If there happens to be like technical fault, I mean, a lot of phones have technical
iPhones,
faults.
Let's not get into
My thing is, can we not then criticize it for just being African and just say, this phone has a problem, rather than this African phone or African-made phone has a problem? Because that's what we tend to do when it's things done by Africans.
Again, Oyin, this is my point. This is the same line of argument. I am judging it simply by what it is.
Yes.
I'm not saying this is the African phone. I am saying this phone is not great.
It's how the message is then received, I think, in a lot of cases. So if you've encountered bad customer service now, it's, well, that's how it is. I can't do anything about it. Do you get what I'm saying? I feel like sometimes, well, me anyway, when I do experience bad customer service from black people, it's just the non-willingness to accept, or is that a word? Unwillingness to accept
100%.
The criticism. It's like, I'm not attacking you. I'm just saying, like, I'm just raising a
valid point.
Exactly, a point or a complaint about your product. So I don't know. I just think it's something that we need to like work on.
Feedback is something that I think the black community, if they're providing a service, are very reluctant to hear. And to the point,
so if this is now a criticism of black business,
it's not this is not a criticism about black business. I think what we need to avoid is this. We need to avoid, simply because you're black, I need to support you. We must not move entitled.
Entitlement of people. Orientation.
I pray that there's a rise of a black middle class in Britain specifically, and of a black African middle class. Like, me and Dami were talking, for example, today before we got here, and I always said that, look, it would be really, like, issues such as anti-Semitism, I really like the way Labour Party has been held accountable. But why can't we, for example, as black Africans, have a movement that holds our grievances accountable? But the point is, we're not unified. Mm. For me personally, we don't take feedback really well. Mm. We're not prepared to listen to each other. And until we're prepared to listen to each other, hold ourselves accountable and learn from our failures.
Mm.
Because the issue of failure is not something that we're willing to take on its head. Sometimes you might have to fail. Sometimes you might have to set up a business, for example, and it completely flops initially. Mm. But that it flopping is the catalyst for greater things.
Okay, but the point is that sometimes or often we don't have the people from our communities don't have the opportunities to create things on the level that people from other communities can.
That's which simply is, because of which the is, lack of collaboration.
Which is why, no, no, which is, collaboration. Which is why there's a lower perceived value, which gives you an excuse not to buy it, right?
If someone, for example, starts a product, launches a product, I'm not going to say because it's an African product, it's going to not be great. What I'm going to say is, I want to see what the value add is. How does it address a potential problem that I'm experiencing? Look at, for example, the fintech industry generally. It's answering a specific problem.
Okay, but what I'm saying is you have to, obviously you're still looking at the value you're getting from the product, right? But let's say it's a hair shops like I was looking for in Peckham that day. Let's say you can buy weave from Mama Asante's shop, or you can buy weave from Timothy Geithner's shop, right? Mm-hmm. The point is, even if the product you get from Mama Asante is a little bit more expensive, you should firm it because you're supporting her.
But
right?
It's worth the sacrifice. Price for me has nothing to do with value add. If it's going to add value and I can afford it, I will buy it. And just for the sake of the listeners to clarify, because Dami said that when he went to Peckham, Dami went to Peckham to buy a do-rag. And I said, Dami went to Peckham to buy a do-rag because he's making himself sound like an activist now, but he simply went to go and buy a do-rag just to let the listeners know that, for one. And I told Dami, I don't know of any African-owned shops, but if, for example, the person who
the
owns
whole
it,
of Peckham
no, no, wait, once if the person who owns the shop is not African, but they have what you're looking for,
why should that be a problem?
Why should that be a problem?
Yeah,
just buy it.
I agree.
That's not the issue. The issue was that I was there looking
Dami
specifically for an
Dami
African
and
owned
I feel like you guys are gonna keep
shop.
Going at it.
That was the issue, that because I was looking for one. So I think we need to be more realistic about that, right?
We
need to be realistic about supporting people from our communities.
Yeah.
If it costs more, we do it. You firm that.
But the quality
has to make sense. It really does have to make sense.
Yeah, and you get the quality. Like, which black businesses aren't doing good quality? That's not really the case.
Let's not go there. We're just gonna wish Rwanda the best.
Quick business idea. I think what I would like is I think I've seen it on Twitter, UK black owned. Imagine a comparison site that basically has all UK black owned businesses on that site. You see customers, for example, who rate the product. And if you're, for example, looking for hair, or you're looking for the local bar, or you're looking for a restaurant, you can see what users, it's almost like a TripAdvisor,
but for black owned businesses.
Why can't someone start that? And if Dami's talking about, value add, if I'm a potential customer and I want to see, where's the local Caribbean restaurant I can go that has got five star, I can basically see it. Someone should start it. That might be a potential idea. Richard Branson, if you're listening, please invest now.
Richard Branson, amen. Richard Branson would listen to this. I think on the topic of just like African investment and African just like new developments, it would be interesting just to get a sense across the room in terms of investing back home, whether it's in property, whether it's in business, whether it's in whatever. Do you think that Africa has like or at least maybe not Africa as a whole, just so that we don't generalize, right? But in terms of like certain countries that you think are lucrative to invest
Well, that's the thing. Why not invest in China? China's got the most lucrative markets if we're talking about manufacturing.
No, but I'm talking specifically about Africa.
No. But we're not talking about Africa because according to Ade, we have to look only at the value add.
Oh my God.
No. If we're looking at that value add, we would make the calculation that we can get better profit in manufacturing from Chinese companies. So why not invest there rather than Africa? And the reason is because we know and we all accept that there's a certain tax we pay as diaspora Africans. And that means that a certain amount of what we do has to be relevant to where we've come from. And that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. That's
hashtag it. Petty.
I really didn't see that he was going to go there, really. But fair enough. I think I get that point. But I am really referring to investing on the continent. The continent, I mean, we've been referred to as the dark continent. We've been said that, you know, Africa is rising. We keep on rising. When we're going to reach the top, you know? And I think the only way that Africa really is going to reach the top is through investment.
Both. What's the top first?
Definitely.
The top in terms of having self-sufficient economies.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one thing I do want to highlight is the fact that almost 20 countries have signed up to the free trade agreement area within the African Union.
Okay.
Mm. So, which is great progress for trade. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
Is this African Union led or something else?
I think it's African Union led.
Because cool. They had the summit recently, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And more countries keep joining, so which is great, which is opening up trade. I don't know why we haven't done this before. I don't know why we're just doing it in 2019. But yeah, in terms of investment, what would you say? I know a lot of people who say investing in property, for example, in Lagos is a great idea. Is it? I don't know.
I think... for me, is the African continent is an important time in its future. I think in terms of my political ideology, I'm a big believer of being center. So yes, the state should be able to provide the relevant welfare, but I think I think it goes back to what we said initially, job creation. Mm-hmm. So I know something that the vice president, Osinbajo, said, I read an article
of Nigeria,
a while ago. He said, gone are the days whereby the future billionaires will be oil tycoons specifically, mm-hmm. but the new generation of billionaires will come from a tech background.
Yeah.
And I think if I was to invest back at home in the diaspora generally, is I'll be interested in tech innovation. So especially within our financial services, if we look at, for example, the UK, traditional banks have been challenged.
Mm.
Gone are the days whereby you need to go into the bank and speak to a cashier. Everything is being automated. Everything is online. And the future is fintech.
Mm.
And I think that in the coming years, in Africa generally, a lot of money will be invested within the financial services. So if I was to invest, I wouldn't do the typical property, but I would look at, for example, fintech, especially with technology, because think about it this way. We all have a fast food mentality in the sense of you want things here and now, you want things by a click of a button.
Mm.
And I think that same almost culture that we have in the UK, we should spearhead that back
in Africa.
Mm. But ultimately, the key thing that I would look for as a potential investor and also a learner of the market is what sorts of initiatives is the government of that particular country providing me?
Mm.
How is me investing positive rather than investing in a hostile climate?
Yeah, definitely. The regulatory environment for investment in Africa is very, very much problematic, even in terms of like for foreign investment. The safety of your assets is one of their big, it's a big issue. For example, in Nigeria, one thing that I'm aware of is the fact that there's issues around land and ownership of land, and the government apparently owns all the land and you're just leasing the land from the government. So what incentive is that giving to people who want to set up structures and build infrastructure if the government still has the right to wake up one day and just say, you know what, we want our land back?
What?
But like in theory, that they would have that
theory,
right.
In theory,
they
in would practice, have that right. It's not so much like that. I mean, the government, they are much smarter than that. They know that they can't just do that because it means, especially with foreign investors, it basically will not encourage the culture of investing. So I think, again, going back to good leadership and the importance of having a good president, is that you need someone who understands the importance of these things in the society.
Word.
So just to like a good segue into like my own point now, it would be foreign investment. So a good way probably would be, so bonds. I don't know if people tend to know more about like the sovereign bonds. Mm. And recently, not so recent now anymore, but last year around like summertime, the Nigerian, was it Stock Exchange, had this deal with like the London Stock Exchange where they were able to release bonds, sovereign bonds. They listed Nigerian sovereign bonds on the London Stock Exchange. So UK or Nigerians or whoever who are interested in investing into Nigeria can do so. So the benefits of getting involved in sovereign bonds is that the money raised from that could then go into like infrastructural development.
Yeah.
So like the roads or wherever we feel like, you know, the money needs to go. So going back to good leadership, the only way that can come out in a good way is that if we have someone who knows not to divert the funds elsewhere. Mm. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I feel like in terms of investment, there are many ways to invest. Properties, it's not a situation of, you know, the government can wake up one morning and chase everyone out.
But wouldn't
it's not like
wouldn't,
that.
Wouldn't it be, it literally just... We've gotten to a point where I feel like, for example, in Nigeria, we have laws that have been set in place for years and years and years. Mm. While in practice, things may not necessarily operate the way the law is saying it should or it could, wouldn't it just provide a lot more certainty to people to know that the government actually doesn't have a right to their land under any circumstances, so long as they have paid for that freehold? This is just an example, because there are other like regulatory issues.
Yeah, you get even like eminent in the UK. Domain and things. Yeah.
Yes, even in the UK, everything belongs to the crown.
Mm-hmm.
So everything. The Land Use
even
Act,
life.
Even the Land Use Act in Nigeria, is pretty much the same. So all the land in the state belongs to the governor, and he basically allocates or she allocates. So I think it's the same thing. And then we also have other incentives like the Pioneer. Tax exemption, I'm not too sure, but it was something we were taught in law school. So lots of stuff that are also listed, especially for foreign investors who want to come in to do business. So these things are still there, but I feel like some people might not really take advantage of them, or it's just not being explained enough.
But there's not enough awareness. Mm.
Okay, but I think one thing is, okay, look, we need this, we need these... actually, a good business idea, I think, would be to kind of create some kind of platform that was an investment platform for diaspora people who wanted to invest in Africa. Mm. Right? Go on.
What I would want to see is this. We see a lot of venture capitalists that invest in startup and scale up businesses. Well, if you look at the startup scene right now within the UK, you see a lot of VCs investing. What I would want to basically see is I would want to see a lot of VCs that are specifically centered at investing at high potential African-backed businesses and founders within the diaspora. So, but in order for us to get there, because this might be as well, this might be a criticism of myself of not doing enough research, or there being a lack, there being a gap in my understanding. I would want to see more forums on how can you invest in Africa in terms of bonds, in terms of property, and for me to have more awareness, because that's what makes Africa as a continent more luxurious. If you know the opportunities that are there, you're going to want to invest.
Yeah.
So for example, we see Victoria Islands, Ikoyi, Banana Island, all of these are the places to go. But I'm sure once upon a time, it wasn't always the case. And those who invested years ago are probably now smiling because they're able to see the returns of their labor.
Yeah.
But this is the thing, right? So you nearly took the words out of my mouth, because I think you're about to say something I'm saying, right? Which is, what are we investing for? Are we, why do we want to invest? Are we these, are we acting as these venture capitalists who essentially act like vulture funds who invest in places and then make sure that they collect on the returns of their investments in higgy haggle ways.
But it's not vulture. No.
I'm just saying, like, what's our mentality? What's the mentality behind our interest in investing? Are we investing because we want to make money, or are we investing because we want to contribute to social causes?
That's the
ultimate question.
But hold on, you can be a socially focused company but has a commercial goal.
For example,
right? But then you are admitting that your interests aren't merely financial, right? And I'm just saying,
there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm just asking the question. So when we talk about the investing, what are you guys thinking of? Are you thinking of investing in the same way that a vulture fund would invest in student loans in the UK?
I think it really can be both.
Like, it really can be both. Like, for example,
let me give an example.
With bonds, and I didn't actually know that the Nigerian Stock Exchange cannot be listed in the London Stock Exchange as well, which is absolutely great and something to look into because I've been looking to invest. But one way, and I don't know if it's a specific country or if it was the African Development Bank, but they're releasing green bonds, right? And green bonds are essentially, quote unquote, like climate change bonds, which enables you to invest in those bonds for specific returns, right?
We also have them in Nigeria as well.
You have them what?
We have them in Nigeria as well.
Exactly. So there are, so things like that are socially oriented because they go towards power infrastructure. And not just power as per oil generating power, but like power, like sustainable energy, basically. It goes towards that. So that's socially oriented. Because if there's more power in the country, it generates business. It generates opportunities for jobs and growth and blah, 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 blah. Definitely. But at the same time, you get your returns on it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
That's not what I'm saying.
So apologies. Dami, if you invest in the business, let's say, for example, you invest X amount of money, are you not going to want your return?
Yes, I'm going to want my return.
So does that make you a vulture fund?
No. This is what I'm saying.
So don't you think it's an insult to VCs for you to call them, I'm a vulture fund?
No, they don't all act like vulture funds. My point is...
Is it an insult for you to call them a vulture fund? Okay. If they're there to enable a business to be able to...
No, it's not an insult if they're acting like vulture funds. This is my point, right? My point is this. What we need to do is we need to recognize that when we're talking about investing in Africa, we're investing for financial reasons, but we're also investing for social reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I just want us to acknowledge that.
But that goes about
Okay, exactly.
Because otherwise we're looking at the return on investment that you mentioned earlier when you're talking about supporting black businesses. And that's not necessarily the case when we talk about Nigeria.
You're saying something that is obvious. If I invest in something, I'm investing because I believe it, and I'm investing because I want my money back.
Yeah,
it's not a charity.
So something like going back to the bonds and why it's a good example is that you're investing into the development of the country, so infrastructural purposes, but you're also getting your returns after a certain period of time. So that's like a win-win situation. You're doing it for like the social cause, but you're also doing it for your own benefit.
Okay, cool. So, I just want that to be really clear because I want us to be cognizant of our role here, right?
Mm.
And it's very possible that we get to a place where there are lots of people investing in different initiatives in Africa who are there simply to make money, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I want us to be cognizant that that's not what we're there to do. We're also there for social reasons, right? Yeah, and to help those social causes as well.
It will automatically result to that.
But that's not always the case. That's the point I'm making, right? You have to make sure, you have to be clear, right? That it's also for social reasons, or you start getting to a point where you're just there to take.
Yeah,
right?
So that's
what I'm saying.
Going off of Dami's point, there's this guy. And I sent you guys the article in the group chat. I don't know if you guys got around to reading it. Marek Zimlowski. He's a Polish investor who came into Nigeria to invest. And he co-started Jumia. And a number of like e-commerce tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so he partnered with a Nigerian. He called them a godfather. And that godfather basically... is a difficult man and he had his demands and Marek wasn't delivering or did not deliver or whatever. And people were seeing him smoking crack and doing loads of stuff. Like, and he basically wrote like a whole expose on the fact that how his experience of doing in Nigeria was. And it kind of painted this Godfather like really, really bad. But then Nigerian people who knew Marek, who's seen the way he has done business. I'm just going off of your point, really, in terms of like, what are you investing for? Is it for social good or is it just for money? Mm-hmm. So he didn't just go to Nigeria just to invest his own money. He also went there to ask to find investors to invest in his own business to be on the African continent. So it's I guess it is a fair question to ask. It is definitely a fair question to ask because someone like Marek, who seemed to have had maybe good intentions, really just turns out like he was just spending investors' money willy-nilly to an extent. I mean, the investor has provided his part of the story. I'm yet to read that. But apparently, like, he really was a bit of a problem, especially dealing with like Nigerian investors' money and other investors' money in Nigeria. Like, he wasn't necessarily the most transparent and open person.
Yeah, so
in his business.
So that's another problem with the whole Godfatherism. Like, how are you approaching the country? And people just think, oh, because they just have this idea that Nigeria doesn't have, is a lawless country.
Yeah.
We do have laws, or Nigeria does have laws. And it pains me because I know of these laws and it's like there are processes. If you want to do something like this and get the best out of it, there are ways to do it and you can still get the government, full government backing in most situations. But I'm guessing the whole misconception of, you know, I can't do it the normal way without, you know, getting into some sort of
higgy-hagger.
It's not always like that. So I think we need to like start promoting, come clean, come correct, and in most cases you'll actually get the help that you're after.
And yeah. I think ultimately my wider thought is the more we have more people who are enlightened as to the investment opportunities and how they can invest in Africa generally, the more the status quo in terms of the millionaires and the billionaires will be challenged. So I don't know about any African countries, but for example, what I can say is, let's look at, for example, Dangote and Otedola, for instance. The more people who are well aware of the different investment opportunities, the risks that are involved, mitigating the risk. My prediction is, in the next 7 to 15 years, these will no longer be the billionaires in terms of the top pinnacle. Yes, they will be they'll be very well off. But what's then going to happen is, and where the vice president of Nigeria's prediction will then come in to it is, there'll be new millionaires, new billionaires, new innovators that will then now come. And basically, there'll be a pendulum swing in Nigeria specifically of those who are the traditional top earners and wealth creators and job creations. What we need now in the African continent is, hold your hands and lift up your head, educate yourself and be prepared to invest in the nation, knowing that you might come undone or you might be basically famous.
Definitely. I agree with what you just said. Funny you should actually mention Dangote. So I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, the Nigerian government passed a new law, the Federal Competition and Consumer Act. And if you're familiar with Dangote, no discredit. I can't just come on air and just bash him or anything. He does great stuff and one of Nigeria's greatest export, great stuff. However, in terms of the competition in Nigeria, whenever we mention Dangote, there's this, okay, you know, people know where you're going with that statement. So I definitely agree. And with the new laws that are coming into place, now there's never really been a better time. So you have the laws, hopefully you have the judiciary at some point to help you. So it's all about, you know, being able to make the best out of what you've been given. Mm. And competition right now is what we need. We don't need the monopolies. We don't need people who are just sitting and not budging. So yeah, definitely. I completely agree what you just said.
Awesome. I think we've had a great discussion on that. And just as a note, some of the most successful industries on the continent as a whole has been fintech, really. And Nigeria stands at number one with Andela, which is a USA and Nigeria collaboration. And they're a fintech company. Mm. And they've worked with the Nigerian government with the trader money distribution. And there's a lot of controversy around that, but we're not going to go into it. But it's just to point it